So the first item is a roll call, please.
Commissioner Sinapa?
Present.
Commissioner Geary? She's excused, right?
Not excused.
Yeah.
What is it?
Excused.
Oh, she is. That's right. She's excused.
Commissioner Blackburn?
I'm excused, too.
Commissioner Taggart?
Here.
Commissioner Christopher?
Here.
And Supervisor Couch?
He's excused. He's in Wasco today. So I wanted him to be here, though. But we needed him last month, really. So anyway, welcome again. Let's see. First of all, if you have any electronic stuff, please turn it on mute. We had one issue last time. Mute or off, whichever you want. I'll make sure mine's checked. Just pretend you're in the county chambers, and it's the same rule. And let's see, approval of summary of proceedings from last month. So we need, if there's any discussion or I need a motion to accept.
I'll make a motion to accept.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No, thank you. Motion carried. Public presentations. I'll go ahead and read this again. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes. So, everyone, anything? Okay, Sunday. Just make sure you state your name for the record.
Sunday Martino. So, you know, at the end of 2019, we were kind of trying to move forward a little bit as far as bringing more information from rescues and that kind of stuff. And then 2020 hit, and we kind of took a big hiatus from all this. So we're just kind of getting back in the swing of things. And so I've been doing the best I can to get more rescues and more of the, you know, the members of our community that do a lot of work. For instance, I'm really glad, and they'll be speaking as well, but Brad is here. They are a small group that has been doing so much in the community as far as, like, you know, stray dogs all over the place. She has a lot of feeding. They do cat colonies as well. And so I'm really glad to have them here.
What is her name again?
Rad. It's
Rescuing Abandoned Dogs.
Dogs. Sorry. So just a little precursor for them. They're going to bring some of their information as far as, like, kind of like the areas and how many animals that they're currently working. Because I think it's really important to point out how much, not just the time, but also the money that we're spending on, you know, rescuing and helping out community, you know, not just owners, but also like the dogs and the cats and that kind of stuff. It's medical, it's training, it's food for them, supplies for them, time, gas, everything to get there. So I'm going to try to, you know, bring in people each month as well.
And I think it's great.
We can get to something where maybe we can have like a monthly report from rescues in the community.
Now, I don't think the microphone's working, because I you think it's on?
It was
did
on.
Could you guys hear it okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm the only person that couldn't hear it very well, but it doesn't sound like it's on. Okay. Thank you for that comment. Anyone else from table one?
Susan Richardson, 93306. Just a couple of concerns. You know, you all know I've been coming to the meetings for a while. And I know there's people that's done a lot of work on, you know, like trying to get spay and neuter or some regulations going. My concern about all of this is I don't know that it matters whether we come up with breeding regulations that fit the commercial animal permit or whatever. My biggest concern is having the resources to enforce this. I think this is the bottom line problem here, is there's not enough resources to, you know, really put a dent in this. And like Sunday and everybody said every time we come here, You know, there's a lot of people out there that are rescuing dogs and heckling them. I mean, in the community that you never even heard of, that you guys never hear of. I mean, they just do it. So number one, that's my concern, because part of their mission statement is what? Prevention of cruelty to animals, right? And without, I think your job also is to advocate for the shelter as well as to the community, to the board of supervisors, that if you really want to fix this problem, be a solution to this problem, you're going to have to figure out how to give them the tools to do that, because we're not going anywhere. This is not, we're not really making a dent. When you figure like a Unity Rescue, you know, ships 2,000 dogs a year out here, and that's just one rescue, and yet you can go on Facebook any given time and see how many other rescues are working, yeah. How many are full, how many are leaving this town. I mean, yes, we need the laws and the ordinances, but I don't think that's the solution to the problem at this point. I think you guys need to advocate to the Board of Supervisors, you know.
More money.
You've got to have the resources. If you're a phone resolve this problem, you've got to have the resources. It's not going to happen. The other thing that I'm concerned about is, we've all had very bad experiences with shelters and animal control and stuff like that, but my concern is, and I briefly said you kind of touched base with Nick on it, is, you know, we hear a lot beyond the community is that, you know, oh, don't call animal control, they're just going to put the dog down. Don't call animal control, they're assholes, or, you know, whatever. And yes, I know every once in a while we get misinformation from even animal control, because it's happened to me personally, so I know. You know, so my other concern is getting out in the community and advocating for, I don't care, city, county, it don't matter, SPCA, advocating for these shelters, that this is not what's happening. And that people need to realize, if we don't start doing something and providing more support, animals are going to be put down, period. That's the bottom line. Somebody's going to lose their life. So I challenge you guys to start advocating a little bit more support and also the community, you know, a little bit more transparency for the community. Because I'd say not everybody, the overall feeling is they could give less than a crap about animal control and shelter. So,
thank you.
That's my challenge.
Good comments. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Table one. Okay. I'll roll here.
I'm actually just going to piggyback off both Sunday and Susan said. So,
your name, please.
My name is Michael Nehra, and I'm actually back in the 93305 area code, which is still counting. As of last week, Unity K9 Express and Outreach have rescued, fostered, and transported 1,750 dogs this year, and are tracked to be over 2,000 by the end of this year. So that's just one rescue. Then they transport them out of town, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they get all the dogs out of here.
That's just one.
But yeah, that's just one local rescue. I just have one quick question about the, actually I have a few, but about the intake. So if I'm reading this correct, beginning of animal count as of 9/1/21 and ending 9/30/21, which was last month, you know, we took in 318 dogs, and 98 of those 318 were euthanized.
Are you talking about the current thing you just got
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And which column are you on?
It's the first one.
So, just so I can understand, are we talking about September of 21 or the
yes.
Year-to-date in 21?
This is this page right here, right? This is
what is the date? What's the year, though?
Yeah, so there's four different printouts for four different time periods. If you're just talking about the month of September
yeah.
of 2021,
yeah.
So yes, it was 106 total dogs that were euthanized in the month
okay.
of September.
And so that's just 1 month.
And okay, 41 cats.
Yeah, so our save rate has gone down to 63.76%.
So the overall save rate for the month of September was
80.2. Okay, I gotcha. So what I'm kind of on the same page as Susan. I'm I'm always out about. I'm out in the public. I'm like all over the place. I work in a lot of different public areas, and pretty much everybody that knows me knows I advocate for animals everywhere I go. And what I would kind of request for myself is the same thing. Is maybe if I know it's you guys, everybody's busy, but if it's something we could just work on, so I could work on it, is what I could get from the community, from private companies, from all the private people I know, where we could speak up more for the county shelter, for the animals. Just basically, I just need more information of what I could put out into the community to ask for help, basically, to get you guys help, you know? Because I feel like I can do that. And I see so many people on a regular basis that aren't too involved in rescue and don't really know, but would like to help, you know? And I've just kind of, if I could get some more information on what's really needed.
Okay, well, I need to network a little bit better.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I would just like to
talk after the meeting about that. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you for your interest, Sean. And,
My name is Brianna Abla, and I'm with Bakersfield Boxers and Bullies Rescue. I just wanted to give some information on what we have done with our rescue just within this year. We're only in September, and we've spent about $20,000 just in training on dogs. We have adopted over 100 dogs already this year. Most were adult pit bulls, owner surrenders, and pit bulls that needed to be in an only dog home. Which is extremely hard to find because at least everybody has one dog, one cat, so it is very, very hard to do that. So most of the time, if we can't find a foster or we can't find a home fast enough, we're paying for them to be in a boarding facility just sitting there. We also get contacted way too much from people on they have to get rid of their dogs because their landlord won't let them keep it. So if there's ways to get information, get help to these landlords to tell people, you know, if you want to keep your dogs and you want to live here, fix your dogs, vaccinate your dogs, getting liability insurance for your dogs so that these people can keep their dogs, because a lot of the time people say they have no options. They don't know. They don't want to get rid of their dogs, but in order to live somewhere, they have to. So it's heartbreaking for them. It's heartbreaking for the dog. It's heartbreaking for whatever rescue takes them. So if we can just try to come up with something, more information for people and resources
for them. Did you have a comment? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right, thank you very much. Table 2, Danny, anything?
Well, we're left.
You're right, and next, anything? Nothing? You do? Okay, why not? Oh, come on.
So we've never been to a meeting before. Heard all the comments, and then we realized, well, two people can talk, and so I don't know if you prepared comments, but since I'm there on the table, then
we can go. I need both your names, though.
Okay.
And I guess we'll give you 4 minutes. Is that how that would work? Okay.
So I'm Leslie Nielsen.
I'm Gina Rollo.
What was your name again?
Leslie Nielsen.
Okay, good.
And I'm Gina Rollo.
RAD, which stands for Rescuing Abandoned Dogs.
Yeah, I got that.
We're informal. We're not a 501c3, just the three of us, and we just try to do as much
you're
as
trying
we
to
can
test your hands.
To save dogs. But mostly what we're doing is going out for all the dogs that have just been dumped on the outskirts of town.
Well, we commend your efforts. Yeah.
And just trying to save as many as we can.
I'm
going to
talk real quick because I know my minutes are going to start. Okay, so I may repeat everything. This is new to me, but it's not new because I've heard about it. So if I repetitive, forgive me. So we formed RAD a couple years ago. My part of the rescue is we try to collect donations for food. Both Cheryl and I go out about 4 hours twice a week, so 8 hours a week. We haul about 150 to 200 pounds of food each time to the stations, plus about 80 gallons of water. Each time.
Where do you get the food from? I'm just curious.
A lot of times we get donations for the food, and a lot of times we purchase it.
Okay, and you're from what area?
I live in the southwest.
Okay.
I live in the southwest, but we go out to the county.
You go to the county, okay.
Yeah, we go out to Mueller, South Island, Edison. I never even knew about those places till.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It takes about 4 hours a week. I go twice. I know Cheryl does, too. We haul water. and we pay for our own gas. I work full-time to do it. I love the animals. We understand how busy the shelters are. We respect the shelters, but our goal is to actually help you guys. So what I think from my perspective, when I see an animal out there, I'm trying to socialize it, but I'm doing that by feeding it, getting it to know me, so once it does get rescued, it's not going to be so aggressive. That's what my soul looks at. I see people throw animals out the window like a baseball all the time. They open the car door, you guys, they kick them out. We see it all the time. Can I get their license? Sometimes, but they take off. But what I would love to see, and I talked to Cheryl and Leslie, I would love to see signs being made that said, if you dump an animal, it is illegal. Call this number. Or if you see somebody dump an animal. To me, it has to start at the core. I was a fitness trainer for 39 years till COVID shut me down. If somebody came in and needed exercise, I always started at the core. Okay. Same thing with this. That's what I see. I love what I do. It's like going to Vietnam twice a week. But you know what? Somebody's got to do it. And these ladies are amazing. I know I've got a second, so I'll be quiet. Real quick, though, we did make a little discarding, and I'm going to give it to you guys. You have to look at it now.
Okay.
But it has what we've got. It's county.
Do you want it back?
No, that's for you guys.
Oh, what do you
know? Yeah, and we have, that's thank for you guys. Yes, okay. You know all that. Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you. Good comments. Thank you.
I spend a lot of time out trying to catch dogs, trap dogs, that type of thing. I socialize our dogs, spend time with them. We unfortunately, we don't have like a foster network or anything like that, so we put them in boarding. We pay to have them in boarding when we get the dogs. And I go spend time with the dogs at the boarding facility and, you know, get them used to people and leashes and all that kind of stuff. And I spend a lot of time finding rescues for them. And transporting them to vet appointments and to the rescues and all that kind of stuff. So we spend a lot of money on, you know, boarding and gas and vet and all that. We do have, we're not a 501c3, and people know that, but they do donate because they recognize what we're doing and they appreciate, you know, what we're doing for the dogs. And so we do have funding behind us that helps us to pay for, you know, those various items. And we spend our own money as well. So.
Yeah. I was wondering how
we can do it.
How you exist.
We couldn't do it. I mean, if we didn't have people helping us,
yeah.
You know, financial backing, we couldn't save nearly as many dogs. But we do spend our own money as well.
Have you thought about being a 501c3, or is it two?
We have. I think we've just kind of decided that we just want to stick with being
the way you're doing
just
it.
Kind of, you know, nose to the ground, three people just doing as much as we can. We don't really want to.
Well, I think you're doing a great job. I wish there was like 5,000 people like you in Bakersfield doing all the same things.
Yeah. Anyway. So I guess I just want to give a really quick example of recently. There was a dog at the side of, two dogs at the side of the 99 freeway who'd been dumped near Taft Highway exit. And one of them got hit and was deceased, and the other one wouldn't leave his side. It was the female. I'm sure they were a paired mate. She had just recently been pregnant. You could tell she'd had babies. She was recently, so essentially, probably, you know, they wanted the babies, but they didn't want the dog, so they dumped them in the orchards over there, and they were right by the freeway. So she stayed right by him at the freeway, and for days, people tried to trap her and couldn't get her until we finally were able to trap her, and she had like a big gash in her leg, and so we took her to the vet, and they had to put her. Under anesthesia to do the legs, we went ahead and had her spayed and all that at the same time, so she doesn't have to do that twice. But, you know, by the end of the time that she's been at the vet and we kept her in boarding there, she was a really shy dog, and so we didn't want to have to move her more than once, and the staff there is very attentive and very helpful, and I go there all the time and spend time with her as well. But we're going to spend about $1,400 on that one dog.
I'm just going to ask you what the bill was for that.
One dog. And that's for them putting her under anesthesia and doing the spay and repair work, and then her staying there and boarding for it. It's taking us 2 weeks for her to heal from the spay there, and then now we had another week and a half or so. We found a rescue for her. In that time frame, we're, you know, working really hard to find a rescue for her. But she's a really shy dog. She's a shepherd mix, shepherd husky probably. So it's just hard. It's really hard. The rescues are all full. We place them with 501c3 rescues. So our goal is to get them off the street and take care of them while we find a rescue for them that can do the, you know, vetting of the fosters and the permanent homes.
See, there's a lot of people like you guys that we don't even know. And I'm glad that you're here because you're saying, hey, we exist, we're doing this and this and this, and you might inspire other people to do more things too. So I commend all your efforts, and please keep coming to the meeting so we know what's cooking out there, because a lot of stuff's under the radar that we don't know about. I know what Nick's doing, but I don't know what everybody else is doing. So anyway, great comments. Thank you very much.
Well, I think, and just for a quick comment, I think it's important that you guys know that too, because really that's also with all the rescues or the people like them that you don't hear about are really is helping them out in terms of kind of keeping the no-kill to an acceptable level.
Yeah, you see, that it just improves the communication around the county. If we hear from you, we hear from you, we hear from you, maybe we have some new people, we'll know better really what the situation is. So I'm just glad that you showed up. Yes, ma'am. Did you want to come back up?
Yeah.
How you changed your mind, okay.
She told you. She warned you. She talked a lot.
You got 2 minutes. No one else honors the clock, but it's 2 minutes.
All right. My name is Cheryl Beckel. Cheryl Beckel, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My zip is 93307, so obviously I'm with Rescuing Abandoned Dogs. I think the only thing I want to say, I don't know really how it all works. I just know what I see and what I do, and I know the need that this county has. I feel like there's a blind eye to these dogs.
There is.
And they don't need to die or be slaughtered in the shelters. And I know the shelters work so hard, and I know they're overwhelmed. You know, the rescues are overwhelmed. The shelters are overwhelmed. They don't want to put the dogs down. People on Facebook want to turn the dogs over to, you know, the shelter because it's supposed to be a safe place. But if the shelter's full, where do you put the dog? You don't. You kill some animal so you can make room for this other one.
Hopefully find a rescue.
And, right. But there's such an influx. When they're out, I guess, doing what we're doing out there, feeding, there's so many animals that are just kicked to the curb out there. They're dumped. You're in the orchards. I mean, there's a lot. I'm driving down to feed puppies, dogs. They're just everywhere out there. I've been out there walking my own dogs, and I saw a truck dump a dog, kicked it out of the truck. I had to go home, get a trap, go get this dog, and get it safe. But it's not an isolated event. It happens all over the place, and I just I don't have the answer.
You're bringing awareness more to the group by coming and telling us your experience, and I'm happy to hear them.
I mean, it's just hard to sleep at night sometimes, so thank you.
Thanks very much. You're an advocate. Next table, anybody in the back table?
Well, I just, real quick.
Can we have you?
I don't think.
We need you to, there's
one
here.
I don't want to go up there.
Go on now.
Christy Howard.
And your name, please.
Christy Howard. I don't think none of us wants to live like this, see these dogs on the street. And I know that you guys are working on solutions, Sunday and you, Nick. And it's just, hopefully we see it in our day, because what these ladies are doing and everybody's doing, we don't want to continue to do this. We don't want to continue to see dogs dumped on the streets. We'd like it out there if there were minimal dogs so that everybody's not overwhelmed. And I know you guys are working on the laws and the rules to change something, and I appreciate it. I don't think nobody wants to really go out and spend 8 hours of the week or live with so many foster dogs or be so overwhelmed, whether that's county, whether that's a nonprofit, whether that's these ladies doing it on their own. That's it.
Well, it's very frustrating, and I feel your pain just like you do, because I love animals as much as you guys do. So if you want to get me mad, just abuse an animal, I'll get mad real quick. So I don't like any of the stuff that's going on.
Well, the difference is that we see those abused animals and pick them up and try to help. Right. But a lot of times with a nonprofit, there's not enough finances. Like she said, $20,000. There's not enough finances to take care of all these dogs. We do need some major help. And again, I don't have the answers, just like you ladies don't. But it's frustrating. It's sad.
That is frustrating.
And we see it.
Sandy, I'll give you another minute if you want to. Do you want to make another comment? Did you raise your hand? I thought already.
Me? Oh, yeah. No. Me. Do I want me to go back up?
Did you want to go back up there, say?
Well, I kind of wanted to just button things up a little bit.
Well, button it up there. You're on the hot seat up there.
I invited them. I'm consistently trying to invite more rescues and individuals because, you know, I think it's been really hard to communicate with you guys exactly what we see because it is horrendous.
Yeah, I know.
It is so horrible out there. I mean, I lose sleep all the time, like kind of going off of what you guys, you know, are saying. We are having a really, compassion fatigue is so real, and it's the same thing with the shelters, you know. I mean, I've made good friends with a lot of the shelter workers at both, or all the shelters, really. I mean, I've got some, you know, amazing people who are like, gosh, we have this dog in here. Can you guys help? The hardest thing is to say no.
Yeah.
And then you find yourself, next thing you know, we're like 20 dogs, 25 dogs, 30 dogs. Do you know how, I mean, that's for just three girls, because my rescue is just me, myself, and another girl. We have a couple of, you know, volunteers that work with us now, but for the longest time, there's only been three of us. Same thing with them, there's only three of them. You know, three of you. So just little tiny teams going around and spending so much of our time and our money on it, and it just feels like we're not being heard. So I have really, really worked hard to get more and more, you know, rescues to come in here, and then, you know, people to do that, because it's the fatigue is it's wearing on us a little too thin.
I got an idea. You know, I've been ride-alongs with some of the field officers. I like to do a ride-along with you guys sometime, and that way I know exactly what's cooking. Maybe some Saturday afternoon. I don't know when you earmark time to go out. I don't know what your schedule is. With my schedule, that's not the only free time I've got, but I would like to go out there and just see what's up. And that way, you're not having to relay everything. I'll convey to my associates here, too, but I'd like to do that. Maybe not this Saturday, maybe some other Saturday. I'd like to spend a couple hours with you guys, go to the hot spots and kind of get a real good feel, because in my world, I don't really see a lot of it, just like a lot of people don't see a lot of it, because we're all busy in our own lives trying to make a living, right? Isn't that what we're doing? That's what we're doing, so that's what I'm doing. So I'd like to see, it's like I went out with the field guys, it's been a few years ago, but I want to see exactly what was going on. You know, you get up to Lamont and Arvin, well, maybe not Arvin, but Lamont, those areas. You see some things that will surprise you, things that I was surprised by. So why don't we talk a little bit after the meeting, and maybe we can do something. Okay, so that's everybody. We're going to go on to item E, staff announcements or reports. Director Cullen? That was all the comments, I think. So.
Oh, bring your Kleenex when you go.
What'd you say?
Bring your Kleenex when you go.
I know. Well, that's okay. I'm not afraid of reality.
I am.
Thank God.
I'm not.
Right, though. Good evening, everybody. Nick Cullen, Director of Kern County Animal Services. I took a bunch of notes. Not all of them make sense to me, but I'll make an effort. First and foremost, you know, this is going to be a shameless plug for Bakersfield Boxers and Woolly Breeds. You know, I've worked for the county in no other capacity than animal control or animal services, so I managed the shelter in 2010 and 11 and 12 and 13 and summer 14. And just the volume of bully breeds that came to the facility and the number that I personally am responsible for marching down to the euthanasia kennel and the struggle that we had and still have with finding homes for them. I think some folks get irritated when I point out that it's gotten better. Okay? It has gotten better. But that doesn't mean that we're finished, right? You guys are all here pointing that out. I can tell you that we're not finished. But I can tell you that I remember for years having rescues come into our facility, who I was grateful for, by the way. We're talking about 10, 11, 12, 13. And they were saving, we were just talking about this the other day, they were saving the cute and fluffies. But in actuality, they needed to be, because even the cute and fluffy dogs back in 10, 11, 12, and 13 were at risk of euthanasia. I couldn't keep them healthy. and we couldn't engage with the community. They didn't want to come adopt our pets. You know? Just to consider at some point that there might be a rescue that was strictly there for the most part for saving those bully breeds. Like, I give you all the credit in the world, man, because we struggle now to this day to find placement for those dogs. And I mean this in the way that all rescues help us, right? And I'm not talking about personal opinions on how they help or how they raise funds. I'm saying, as an organization, I don't care what your purpose is. I want you to save the animals that are in my facility. And there's so many that come in that aren't taking the less than highly adoptable pets. And so for an organization that exists just to take those breeds, I just wanted to give you guys a shout out there. You had mentioned, Michael, you had mentioned, what can I do? Unfortunately, that's the kind of conversation that'll take like 6 hours. and honestly, man, it's a terrible thing because if you ask me now, I'll give you one answer. If you ask me in a month, I'll tell you something else because it's always something else. You know, COVID has really done a number to most county agencies. It's really devastated us in a lot of ways. But right now, what I can tell you is that what we are struggling with as an organization, and I will tell you that what the community is struggling with, whether you see it or not, is a lack of access to veterinary care. Mm-hmm. What can you do about that? I don't know. But pick up the phone one day and spend 2 hours calling local veterinarians to try and get your pet seen.
They want to take new patients.
They're not even practicing internal medicine.
No. You have to leave Bakersfield to get any kind of good care for your dog if it's a serious thing.
So that presents a huge problem for us. If you think about it, mm-hmm. we don't allow that to... So many areas it presents a problem for us. Because the problem that the community has getting veterinary care, we're not immune to it. I can't get animals veterinary care quick enough. Mm-hmm. Emergency animals sometimes. And then on the flip side of that, I have officers that are in the field that are demanding and ordering veterinary care, and they can't get it. So, like, that's a problem that's existed for about since the beginning of COVID. I don't know how it's going to get solved. I can tell you that a lot of it is, I'm not pointing fingers at the veterinary care. Those are private businesses. They can make their own decisions. But I will say that there's another structural problem in the veterinary community, that there's not enough veterinarians. There's like 750 vacancies in the state of California, and there's not nearly enough qualified candidates. There's way more jobs across this country than there are anywhere near qualified candidates, veterinarians, licensed veterinarians. Try to get one of those veterinarians to come to a government animal shelter and take on a shelter program to provide triage care for shelter animals and spay neuter. Like, it's the problem that we face is going to change all the time. The problem that we face right now, one of the many problems we face right now, is that none of us can get veterinary care to any extent that we need. I can't hire a veterinarian. I've had a veterinary vacancy now for 2.5 years. 2.5 years. And we've gone through and done a whole salary study. We jacked up the salary and still can't get anybody. The county is having to pay $30,000 to hire a recruitment agency just to find us a veterinarian. And even then, we're having to consider debt forgiveness, student loan forgiveness, pay their transportation fees and their moving fees just to get somebody here so that I can hire them. And we're not unique. There's organizations all across the state, Riverside, Ventura County Animal Services, they're all trying to find veterinarians. So I hate to be doom and gloom, man, but... You ask me what you can do, like, I don't know, man. Sometimes I think, like, there has to be, and I'm trying to do what I can, if I can do anything that's in my power, my authority, just to reach out to the local veterinary to have conversations about seeing clients, you know, about resuming normal operations and try to understand where they're coming from. And try to offer solutions, you know, and it's just a huge problem. And I will tell you that it again, this is going to be doom and gloom, man. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to pull any punches. Like, what we are starting to see, which we knew we would see, is a result of 18 months of local veterinarians not practicing internal medicine, which is spay and neuter, you know, surgeries, and not accepting a lot of new clients. We're seeing a lack of basic routine veterinary care, which is vaccines, and we're seeing a lot of lack of access to spay and neuter. So what we're starting to see now in the shelter, well, I say starting to see, we've been seeing it for 6 months, is puppies. 2 years ago, it was few and far between that you would see puppies at my shelter. Now I see them every day. It's not anywhere near it was in 18, 17, 16, but it's climbing. And that is a direct result of surgeries not being done in the community. We're also seeing distemper at intake. Rescues are seeing distemper. And that is, don't fool yourself, that is a lack of basic veterinary care, a lack of an ability for somebody to create a new relationship with a veterinarian. So, you know, it's a struggle. We're trying to find some solutions to that, not only for us, but for the community. I would like to say it's outside of our control, but it doesn't preclude me from at least making an effort. I'm having lunch with veterinarians, a veterinary outfit on Friday. We'll try to schedule some more next week and just have some conversations and see where that leads. But I think that's like priority one right now. And I think that rescue, that's one of those problems that not only affects us, but affects the rescues and the animal owners and the community. You know, I don't have a solution to it, but we're gonna damn sure take a shot at it. Another thing I wanted to bring up is somebody had mentioned, I don't know who it was, I think it was Susan, you know, how can I help, or how can the commission be more of a spokesperson to the board? You guys have more authority and more influence in the board's decisions than they do, to be honest with you. Yeah. And the time to do that is April, May, June, September. April, May, June, July, August, September. Those are the times when they start having budgeting. That's when they start determining who gets what. I'm not here asking you to go down there and beg for money for animal services, but that's how agencies get resources to provide services to the community. Everybody has a slice of the pie, and everybody's fighting for different things. Some people have passion about the library, some about, you know, child services, some about the homeless epidemic, and the more they hear from the community about particular things, the more they might be inclined to give more resources to whatever it is your passion is about. You should, if you don't already, and I'm not even talking jurisdiction, man. City, county, I don't care. The city needs resources just like we do. But I will tell you that if you don't already, create a relationship with your county board of supervisors that's over your district or your city official. Create a relationship, keep trying and making an effort to send them emails, make phone calls, and approach them in such a way that you want to be part of the solution. You don't want to be drummed out of their office. You want to talk to them about what your passion is. Make sure that it's made clear. And if enough of that happens, then the money starts coming to where it is you want to go. Don't fool yourself. There's a lot of people that have relationships with politicians, and that's how they affect resources going to the agencies that those people care about. I will say that for us, in particular, aside from all the problems that we face in the community, aside from the scary lack of access to veterinary care and the puppies that I'm seeing, which keeps me up at night, and the loss of momentum that we are seeing on a daily basis for the past 18 months. And when I say momentum, well, as an organization, we were starting to see the fruits of our labor. We've been hammering spay and neuter program, 4,000 animals a year. We were spaying and neutering from 2012 all the way up through 2020. And we were starting to see less puppies coming in. Can you imagine, as an organization that was responsible for killing 20,000 animals in 1 year, to start to see a reduction in puppies, and then 18 months later, there they are again. It keeps me up at night, too. I don't know where I was going with that, but what we are starting to look at is not only are we facing those problems in the community like we all are, but we have some structural departmental deficiencies, and I won't get into the nuts and bolts of it, but you start getting into a business strategy of recruiting and retaining good employees, right? We have a job that's super important. Our animal control officers are incredibly important. You know, we talk about the things about creating laws, creating ordinances. You hit the nail on the head, Susan, and you can create whatever law you want, but if there's nobody out there to enforce it, what good is it? Zero. And, you know, we're just now getting to the point where we have 9 officers. And that was up from what we were. And I'm not talking about, we have, again, I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of it, but, you know, we're getting back up to the point where we can hopefully get to 13. That's our goal, to get back to 13. But the problem is, and again, this is a departmental structural problem that really I shouldn't even be talking about, but the compensation, what we pay an animal control officer in the San Joaquin Valley, 7 other counties, city of Bakersfield included, we are the lowest paid animal control officer by 30%. So how can I hire and recruit and retain? I just lost an officer who had 16 years on the job. And he's going to, you know, code enforcement because the pay is better. So the bright side about it is I've been hammering away at this for long enough. And again, a lot of this credit, whatever credit there is to give, is for most of the people sitting in this room right now, because if he hadn't been vocal, not just to me, but to them and to the politicians, I wouldn't even be able to at least have the conversation that I've had for the past 2 years, which is I can't keep plugging away at this without compensating these people, at least what the city of Bakersfield is compensating. So we're having a conversation now about restructuring the animal control officer classification so that we can make it. I talked about it before this commission before. And we've got to the point now where we've developed a flex classification in the animal control officer series. What is a flex classification? That means that instead of our organization was in the Neanderthal times in that we had an animal control officer and a senior animal control officer. That doesn't mean anything in this room, but if you look at other agencies in the state of California, nobody operates like that. There's flexes, so you can have a 1, 2, 3, and a supervisor. And the reason why you do that is because the responsibility increases and you're motivated to learn about the industry that you're in, learn more about cruelty, get more certifications in the field. So we're at the point now where we're having this conversation with the county administrative office to develop this flex classification and compensate it comparable at least to the city of Bakersfield. I couldn't have that conversation if it wasn't for you folks being vocal. We're also making a change in, which again, I would not have been able to even be heard if it wasn't for the folks in this room, and to be honest with you, for the hard work of the volunteers, you're all volunteers, and the volunteers at our facility and the paid staff that has done a much better job than they did prior to 2011 in getting animals out of the shelter alive, because when the better the shelter does, the more, I'm trying to say this without pointing fingers at politicians, but a lot of times the politicians, they're interested in looking good, right? They want to be able to have a good talking. They want to be able to say, what did you accomplish in your tenure as a supervisor or as a governor or as a whatever it is. And so for them to be able to say, well, our county animal shelter saves 80% of the animals that come in. The better we do, the more they can talk about that, the more I can have this conversation about I need more resources. So that a lot of this stuff matters. It's important that there's 52,000 different factors into solving the problems that we face, and I'm just talking about a few of them right now. But so anyway, back to the point. Well, not only are we looking at creating a flex classification for the animal control officer and compensating it more comparable to other agencies, but we're also talking about creating 3 positions in our department that are program managers. So we were able to get some more funding from the board, and we were able to create these. Actually, we didn't get more funding. What we did is we did what's called an add-delete. We deleted 3 animal care worker positions, and we created these program technicians. The salary's better. In case anybody's thinking about it, they're department promotional only. You have to be employed by the department. But the reason why it's so important, the reason why I'm even talking about it right now, is because we realized many, many years ago that the way the shelter structure was built, we were a catch-and-kill facility, and it was staffed that way. People got hired in 2011 to kill dogs. And so we've never progressed. We've never had the structure within the department to even encourage somebody to learn more about behavior, animal behavior, to learn more about event planning and management, and to learn more about behavior modification, and to give them that knowledge that they want so that they can progress in their career, so that animal welfare is actually a career, you know? So we've created these three positions. The county calls them program technicians. We got three of these program technicians. People within the department are going to promote to those. We're in the process right now of interviewing for those positions. We've decided that a loose idea of what those three people will do is a community engagement position, a resource coordinator position, and then what we call a live outcome manager. So the reason why those first two is so important is because we always have all these programs. I'm of the mindset that if somebody, don't get me wrong, there are bad people out there that do bad things for bad reasons. But in my experience, and I spent a lot of time as an officer, I spent a lot of time as a shelter worker, in my experience, more often than not, it's neglect as a result of ignorance or lack of resources. I don't know how to care for this animal better, and I don't have the resources to do it. And what we struggle with is we can promote on Facebook all we want, we can get on the news all we want, but we're not reaching the people that need to understand where those resources are and need to be taught and told why you should care for your animal better and how to do that. And what we get into is this vicious cycle of 123 Main Street that puts their dog on a chain, and then they have kids, and their kids learn that that's how you care for your dog, and then their neighbor learns that that's how you do it, and you get these pockets in the community of people that are irresponsible. But are they intentionally doing that? Are they willfully neglecting their own? Or is there an ignorance there? They don't know any better, and they don't have resources to do it any better. And I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I'm just saying it's worthwhile to look into. So we need to engage the community in the community to talk about where resources are face-to-face. So one of these program technicians, that is going to be their job, is to own that program to get, and it's going to be volunteer-driven, by the way, in case you're all looking for something to do in about 3 months.
I'll do it.
But it's to go out in the community, especially data-driven parts of the community, where these animals are coming from, where the sickness is coming from, where the unaltered large breed dogs are coming from, and strategically place programs in those areas to hopefully develop some positive outcomes. So that's that community engagement position that we're trying to create, what we have created, we're recruiting for right now. And then, you know, we have a resource coordinator that's just going to be strictly trying to connect the community with resources so that they can provide better care for their animal. A lot of what they're going to be doing is administering our spay-neuter program and organizing spay-neuter clinics, and not only that, but creating information that can be disseminated to the community in the community about where those resources are. And then the third one is the live outcome coordinator, which is more shelter-based, and that's just more the responsibility of trying to find a live outcome for each and every of the 10,000 animals that come to us. It's tough to put that on any person's shoulders when their responsibilities also have to clean kennels in the morning, or I have to help this person with an animal they brought to me, or I have to transport an animal to the vet. They get pulled in different directions. So having somebody that their chief responsibility is to develop more so of a plan for each animal that comes into the facility, how they're gonna leave our facility alive, and make that decision on day one or three instead of day 14 behind the eight ball like we are all the time right now. So I hate to be doom and gloom, but there's some good things that are happening. You know, and like many of you said today, like a lot of this stuff keeps me up at night too. And I don't have the immediate solution to it, but I'm not going to stop trying, you know. Anyway, that was my soliloquy there. I'll touch on a few things. I'm not going to go over all the statistics like I usually do, but I did want to mention a few occurrences that we had in the month of September. I will preface it with saying that the month of September was really hard for us, simply because right around the 1st of September we had what the county business organization defines as an outbreak of COVID-19 amongst our staff. So we had a number of folks that came up that tested positive within a certain period of time, and then that triggered some requirements that the county has put in place. So, and I'm not exaggerating, about 50% of our workforce was home for half of September. So if it looks like the numbers have struggled in September, and if it looks like there hasn't been much done, that's why. On September 1st, we put out a plea for volunteers, please come and help us. That was why I couldn't. I was cleaning, the deputy director was cleaning kennels, we were just taking care of the animals that were in the facility. We closed on Saturdays, two consecutive Saturdays, we just didn't have the people. Yeah. So we struggled in September, but I will say, and there's a little reference to it at the end of the director's report, that we just put out a plea for volunteers. We had like 30 or 35 folks that just came out, and it was really haphazard because we weren't able to give them the training that they needed, but these 35 people who we never met before just came out and just really helped us care for these animals over that period of time, and I just couldn't be more grateful just for the response that we've gotten from the community, just from those people that came out and helped us out. We reached out to the community. We needed some puppy pads and little plush beanie babies, and the community came out, which, by the way, if you have any plush beanie babies or a puppy pad, we can still use them. There's some pictures in there in case you're wondering. They're for our puppies that we didn't have in years past. We had a Girl Scouts troop that came out, super cool little girls, and they did this on their own, and they raised funds and bought stuffed animals and just came down to the shelter and donated them on a Saturday, and we allowed them to go in the kennels and give it to the dogs, and it was just one of those feel-good things. And then last but not least, we had two volunteers. Some of you may know Carrie and her husband Ryan. They've been hardcore volunteers for a very, very long time, very vocal supporters of animal services and of animals in general. And they actually they transported three dogs out of our facility down south. I think it was down south to meet a rescue. And they took one of our trucks and did it happily and didn't complain about it, and they took pictures and they were super happy to do it. And it was another one of those things where I think if we didn't have them, we probably wouldn't have been able to find a live outcome for those three dogs. So just a big shout out to Carrie and her husband. By the way, if anybody is interested, I'm not sure anybody would here would qualify, but or if you know of somebody that might, we have a senior animal control officer vacancy that we've been recruiting for 6 weeks now. And it's on the county's website. It's a senior animal control officer. The reason why I say it might not apply to everybody in this room is more of a law enforcement thing, because to be a senior animal control officer, you have to have what's called a Penal Code 832 certification. It's a law enforcement training class that our animal control officers usually receive within the first year. But a senior animal control officer, if you know any law enforcement folks or somebody that might have their PC 832 certification, you have a chance to really make an impact in our field services division. A few last things. We have a really cool program that which we couldn't get off the ground just yet. I'll tell you why. But we worked with the Friends Foundation, and actually it was with the Dutch Brothers Coffee Company. It was a grant program, and we got $10,000 in grant funding. This was about 6 months ago, and we worked with the Friends Foundation. Friends Foundation purchased some microchip scanners, and they're in my office, and what the intent is, we're going to distribute them to the fire department, the fire stations all around the county, and then we're going to promote to the community that if you find a lost animal, and you can't bring it to my facility, any fire station in your area can scan that animal. The only reason why I can't promote it yet is because the fire department hasn't opened all their fire stations yet, and they're hoping to do that in the next few months. So as soon as they do that, we're going to give some training to the fire department, and we'll put out probably some cute little videos and stuff like that, that if you find a pet and you want to try to get them home, go to your local fire station. That came from some folks in Bull Run that had that idea. So keep your ears open for that. I'll probably talk about it more in December or January or so. Another thing that we're really working on, I've talked about it here before, and this actually plays into some of the potential for ordinance changes and the proposal for ordinance changes. We talked about what might be included in those ordinance changes, and that there needs to be resources that go along with some of those ordinance changes, so that if somebody is required to fix their pet, that they have resources to do it. So that falls on our spay-neuter program, and right now our spay-neuter program is struggling simply because of the other stuff we talked about, like veterinarians. But also, we haven't increased the rates of reimbursement for the veterinarian since 2013. So the way the program works is the public comes in. We have two vouchers. There's a spay-neuter voucher that most people qualify for. That's $20 copay. We give you a voucher and you take it to a participating veterinarian. The surgery happens, and then the veterinarian invoices us for a set amount based on the size of the dog. And then there's another one that's free for any bully breed, and it works the same way. The one of the problems in the program is that as time has progressed, veterinarians started saying that's not enough, and they're passing on a stipend, an additional cost to the person who gets the voucher at that point.
Yeah.
What's the point of it? You know, the whole idea is that these people have low income, they don't have the resources, and it needs to be either free or low cost. So I sent out a survey to some of the local, all of the local veterinarians, every last one of the local veterinarians, asking them what it should be, what should the rate be. And four of them answered. And so we're working on increasing that reimbursement rate, and then I'm going to have to do some knocking on doors to ask them what the rate would need to be for them to accept county vouchers. Because the whole idea is to get every veterinarian in the community to not only be doing spay and neuter, but to accept county vouchers so that if somebody gets a voucher, that they don't have to wait 4 months to get their animal fixed, especially if there's some ordinance that requires them to do that. So that's something that we're working on as well. Last but not least, this gets a little technical, but one of our primary purposes is to enforce licensing laws in the state of in the county of Kern. And our staff does all of the administrative work. So, like when you purchase a license, the funding goes to one of our technicians, and they process the payment, and they send you a receipt, and they mail you a tag, and it's a lot of procedural work for some of our staff. Well, there's an organization out there that they've been around for a bit, but they're becoming more and more popular. It's called DocuPet, and for a fee, they do all of that for me. So we're looking at entering into an agreement with this organization so that what would happen is that they would take over all of the communication with the community. So, and the real big benefit of that is what we miss out on right now is when somebody licenses their animal and they're animal's license is about to expire, we don't do any real communication with them to tell them, your license is about to expire, here's a link to renew it. Or, you know, in 3 months your license is going to expire, or your license just expired. You know, we don't do any of that. That's what this organization will do, is they do physical mail correspondence, phone calls, emails, text messages to get people to renew their license. So it's going to take a lot of pressure off of us. It'll increase our licensing compliance. And don't fool yourself, licensing compliance is very important to us because it brings in revenue.
That's right.
And not only that, but 10% of all the licensing revenue goes into a spay-neuter fund to the fixed pets. So that's an update. Sorry, I was a little bit long.
No, it was great. It was great. I did want to thank you for your passionate speech. I mean, I thought it was excellent. I could listen to you for hours, I think, because you've had a lot of great information. I got to tell you, I met Nick about 12 years ago. And I had just sold my company, and I went to a guy by the name of Guy Shaw, who was his was the director at the time. And I said, I want to do something to try to help the animals. And so I met Nick. He had just been promoted to shelter manager. At that time, he was very capable, he was a man of few words, I think. And now he's really lost. We're really lucky to have him in Kern County. So I want to thank you for all that you do. I'm going to start off with Commissioner...
Christopher,
on my right, with any questions?
I'm just curious about your GNR program, the 329 cats that were spayed and neutered in the month of September. Who was that was performing that service for you?
It's Cruise Without Litters, 100%. No, I'm sorry. No. We have a contractually obligated veterinarian, Dr. Fleeman, who comes on site, and she does, it's probably 90% Cruise Without Litters, okay. 10% Dr. Fleeman. We have a fully functional, three-table, state-of-the-art spay-neuter room in our facility that doesn't get used very often.
Okay. And I know back in 2020, before the finance guy, I know he retired when we were out for COVID, that position has not been filled. I haven't seen any kind of financial or budget reports or anything.
It's been filled. We filled it internally. So somebody promoted to the business manager position, but... I don't require her to be at the meetings.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I didn't require Blake to be at the meetings. He just chose to.
Okay.
But is the money that is allocated towards spay and neuter being fulfilled?
Yeah, I think that's one of the chief things that he would do at the meetings was provide a spay and neuter funds report, and we haven't provided that since he left, but simply because we really haven't had any, not too much success in administering. But as we, especially when we get somebody that's going to be in charge of administering the spay and neuter program, which is in a couple of weeks, yeah, we'll start producing some reports, and I will get the report.
Because I hear all the stories, you know, about all you people that are just so heartbroken rescuing all these animals. And let me tell you, rescue is not the answer, it's prevention. And that's every dollar needs to be spent to spay and neuter everything. That's the only way to get at it. You'll kill yourself trying to rescue them.
Yeah.
I know, I almost did. Killed myself, divorced, you name it, I almost went.
So I'm on that same road.
Yeah. Didn't get divorced, I saved it.
Fisher Taggart, anything?
Thank you, Nick.
Just a couple of comments, and I do want to thank every last one of you two for everything you guys do. I've worked in the veterinary industry for the last, almost 13 years, and it's heartbreaking. It is, absolutely. And again, part of the issue with the veterinarians at this point is that they're you know, there's a high rate of suicide. Which is a lot of the problem, and that being the case, again, you've got veterinarians who are going through school that are not necessarily wanting to go into the industry, seeing all that, and it's rough. It's really rough. It's the whole thing, you know. And I feel for every last one of you and everything you do, and Nick as well. You know, it's amazing people like you that keep this going, though. And again, you know, each and every one of you. It doesn't feel like sometimes you're making a difference as one person, but you're absolutely making. And, you know, again, like I said, you know, it's rough. Even at the place I work at right now in Ridgecrest, we've had for the last close to a year, we had one doctor. And we had three previously, but again, they, you know, especially in Ridgecrest, we're a military town. A lot of them come in for a couple of years, then they leave with, you know, their spouses and that. And it's hard to get another doctor that right now we're booking out because we have another doctor who came back for a couple months, but she's leaving the end of November again. And so we're booking clear out into May and June just for well exams, not even for surgeries. The surgeries are even past that. And it's hard. You know, we want to be able to do what we can, but we can't physically. Our poor doctor is just, you know, worked to death most of the time. And it's frustrating for us too. We totally understand where you're coming from. I think until, you know, I don't know what you can do to solve that problem is the thing, you know, because again, you know, I personally, if I could afford to go to vet school, I would be tempted to do so, but, you know, I mean, realistically, you know, it's not that easy, but...
What would it cost?
It's the cost and the fact that you have to go to school somewhere else. If I could do it where I'm at, I'd be okay.
I would only have to.
No, that's it. But I just wanted to make sure, like I said, to let you guys know that you absolutely, every last one of you matters on this, and every last one of you makes a difference.
Thank you. Last question, Snyder.
I don't have any questions really for you, Nick, but I did want to address some of, you know, what we've heard today. When I was a kid, I mean, I feel like some of you probably still think I'm a kid, but when I was younger and I first got into rescue work, I understand, you know, some of what y'all have seen. I have been there, and I'm glad, like, selfishly almost, that I'm not doing as much of that anymore. I really commend all of you for the work that you put in. It's not a fun thing to do. You do it because you have love in your heart for these animals, and I completely 100% understand that. But early on, when I started doing that, I did go to Board of Supervisors meetings and ask for resources to come to animal services. Susan, I 100% agree with you on that completely. But what I realized over time, and I'm not discouraging any of you from lobbying those folks, those supervisors, they definitely need to be lobbied. But when I've had conversations with Supervisor Perez or my own supervisor, Maggard, right, a lot of what's said is, and especially right now when we have, it's not just, you know, puppies that are everywhere in Kern County. There's a rise of crime. We're going through a drought, so there's more and more fires. County workers haven't had a raise in over 12 years here. And so when you think about all those things, and you go to someone like Leticia or like Mike, and you tell them, hey, we want more money for animal services, but then they have these three unions that are coming after them saying, hey, where's our money, right? What are they going to do? Where is animal services on their list of things that need to get done? Do they need to keep firefighters? Do they need to keep sheriffs? Do they need to keep county workers and social workers here when all this stuff is going on here in Kern County, right? That, I'm sorry, like, to be the bearer of bad news, but they look at y'all and they look at this issue all the way down to the bottom because they have all of those other folks there, right? They're, you know, sheriffs, fire, county workers, they're all trying to feed their families. So, like, that's what comes to it. And when you're dealing with that pie, right, I mean, a lot of Bakersfield for some folks, and Kern County for some folks, is a very attractive place to live because we have lower property taxes, right? But what that means is that we have a smaller budget than a lot of other communities in California that can take care of these issues. So one of the things that I would suggest, and I've suggested this before, I don't know if Jerry would get me in trouble for saying this because as a government representative, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but there is a way to make sure that you earmark money for animal control. And the only way to do that is if you get something on the ballot. If you get something on the ballot that is a sales tax that brings money only to animal services, specifically to hire AC officers, right? Because we're trying to get to 13. 30 wouldn't even cut it. 30 wouldn't even cut it, right? We know that. We've seen what it's like out there, right? 30 wouldn't even cut it. So if you really want to bring funds in, that's the only way that I think that you can actually bring in enough funds to even make a dent on these issues and relieve some of the burden on y'all. But if you do get on the ballot, it needs 66% of the vote. There was a library petition on the ballot a few years ago, right? And it got 63% of the vote, failed. And that would have only put like a half a cent tax on our sales taxes, right? But if you get every single rescue to back up a petition and then back it up when it's on the ballot, and I don't know, but in my experience, you know, puppies are a little bit more attractive than, you know, we need libraries. A lot of people don't believe in libraries anymore. But I think y'all could do it. If y'all got something on the ballot, had 66% of the vote, then you could literally earmark money to go directly to AC, and you don't need the supervisor's permission for that money to go. So that's just my suggestion. I'm down to work with all of you on writing up language to do that kind of thing. I'm glad Jerry's not here, because I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to say that kind of stuff.
Throw this out there. There's an organization called the National Animal Control Association. It's one of the larger trade organizations for the animal control industry. And they developed a metric for how many animal control officers are needed to enforce laws adequately. And it's one animal control officer per 17,000 residents. That works out to about 27 animal control officers in the county. Mm-hmm. Just throwing that out.
Let's make it 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it for me.
Thank you very much. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an interesting night. I've listened to the passion in this audience, and you heard the passion from Eric calling in from this head table. You guys are you new people, you realize we're all on the same page, right? We are. We really are. We just, maybe we might have a different idea how to get to the goal, but we all care, and we all want to try to make a difference. So I'm glad you're here. I have no other comments on my side. So the next item, and I don't know if Nick, you can staff referrals. Oh, okay. Actually, commissioner announcements. Do we have any commissioner announcements?
We need to receive
funds.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
I'll make a motion.
Good. Got a motion? I need a second.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor? Opposed? No? Thank you. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Commissioner announcements or reports? Commissioner Taggart?
I would just like to say that we've been spending so much money on the SNIP bus, and although I think it's got some inherent flaws, we keep going. We're doing one double clinic a month, minimum, at $7,000 a pop to spay and neuter approximately 60 pets if we're lucky. which of course averages out to $130, even if it's a cat, a male cat, which, wow, $130 to neuter a male cat, but it's getting done. And
you're the reason why I can't get snipless.
Well, we get them when we even have to do it on Sundays sometimes because there's no other day. And supposedly we are committed to,
by the way,
getting at least once a month.
Commissioner Christopher, who's we?
Have a Heart. Have a Heart Humane Society. Yes, thank you, Nick.
I was going with the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, I noticed on your calls for Tehachapi that it's right in there with Taft as far as how many animal services calls that you guys get on a monthly basis. And I think a lot of that is because they call us. And of course, we help as much as we can. We can't go out and tackle large dogs or anything. We're a bunch of just a bunch of little old ladies, but. You know, the money for the SNP, it's money that we earn at our store, and I think it goes to a great cause. I wish we could double it. I wish we could do two double clinics a month, which we have in the past, but to continue that, you know, that's $15,000 a month, and that's a lot, and we will spend it until we have nothing left to spend or until everything's fixed. Critters Without Litters is a wonderful service, and I love it, but I think it's hard to Tehachapi to drive down to Bakersfield twice to fix two feral cats. And I just wish there was more, that everybody could do more, because as I said, this rescue will kill you. And be careful, because it'll take over your life, and you can't let it. You have to set some boundaries in your life.
Just a thank you. Again, a throwaway comment. There was an awesome guy who years ago he owned some storage facilities called Fortress, and he came and paid a visit to the animal shelter back on Mount Vernon when we were on Mount Vernon. He saw how many pit bulls and bully breeds were coming into the facility, and he said, you know, I got money, I'm going to do something about this. And so he started a voucher program. He did it on his own, and he quickly realized that he couldn't make enough vouchers to stem the tide of the demand for spay and neuter. This is probably 2010, 2009. That guy, I believe he sold Fortress and he opened up an organization called Critters Without Litters.
His name is
Byron Miller.
Interesting.
It baffles my mind how there's not six other Critters Without Litters.
I begged him to come to Tehachapi.
I asked him to do a mobile. I go, why don't you guys just go mobile? They're like,
Yeah, and if you talk to Larry and Vicky, there are some, you know, they're I don't want to speak for them. There are reasons why they can't expand.
Sure.
But I'm just saying, there's other people with money in Bakersfield, and the problem is here. How come there's not a high volume spay neuter clinic on the east side of Bakersfield? Mm-hmm. How come there's not a high volume spay neuter clinic in Ridgecrest or Lake Isabella or Taft? It blows my mind that it hasn't happened. And the need is so great.
It's because my mom's not around anymore.
Hang on, I'm sorry. Actually, you're old.
Yeah.
You're not
old.
She would make it happen.
Right.
Did you really
do
that? No.
I got a little bit ahead of myself. And opening up the commission announcements, what I should have done is, after Director Cullen got done, was open up to you guys and talk about it. If you have any questions on the Richard's report. So I'm going to open it up officially at the first table. If you have any questions you want to ask him about what he's talking about. Nothing on the first and second table. Any questions?
Just one quick, it's just related to funding, and we just recently learned that Newsom had allocated $50 million to UC Davis in 2020 that was supposed to go for becoming no-kill California within the shelters. Did any money from that funnel here?
So I'm pretty intimately aware of that development of that funding. It's actually originally supposed to be $500 million.
Really?
Yeah, this is going back 3-4 years, but it got whittled down to $5 million and then increased to $50 million. Mm-hmm. But those funds are completely administered by UC Davis,
mm-hmm.
and they're developing grant programs to assist communities that are high kill. So those grant programs are not open yet, and they haven't created them, but we've had discussions and conversations about what those programs might look like and the requirements and whether or not we'd be, you know, qualified to apply. So, but you're damn sure that when they do open it, we'll apply.
Absolutely. Okay. Any other questions from Kevin?
If you want to look it up, it's California for All Dogs and Cats Initiative.
Okay, table three, any questions on the commissioner's or the commissioner's report? Nothing? Okay. Yeah, I got caught up in all the passion and I lost track of where I was. So anyway, I wanted to make sure everybody got a chance to ask anything they wanted to ask about the monthly report. As far as I have no comments on my end as far as the commissioner announcements, there's just a lot going on and sometimes you wonder, you know, what is the answer? And the answer is you just got to keep plugging away like Mr. Taggart just said. You might not think that you're making much of a difference, but you just have to keep going. When you look back, wow. It's like a subject I teach at Bakersfield College. It's called Kaizen, which is continuous improvement. The Japanese started. I'll just give you a little tidbit of it. It's called continuous improvement. And what they teach in Japan, primarily, is where they use it, but they've adopted it over here too. You make little changes along the way. You might not think that you're doing much, but when you look back after a year and you look back where you came from, wow, that's where continuous improvement pays off. So that's what we're kind of adopting here is continuous improvement. They call it Kaizen is the Japanese word for it. But yeah, you might not think we're doing a whole lot, but you know, after a while, they start to add up. So anyway, that's my comment on that. On old business, staff referrals, none. And then we have update on the AKC Reunite. I did talk to Janice Anderson before the meeting, and I don't know if anybody here that wants to talk about anything on that. If you do, that's great. If you don't, that's cool. But she's going to be here next month to give us a better update. So if there isn't anything on that, we'll go on the AKC. On the ordinance subcommittee revisions, I talked to Commissioner Gary before the meeting. She's getting ready to go to Texas. And her recommendation is we shelve it until next month when she gets back. Nick wanted to talk a little bit about it, though. So he's got a few comments.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, that September was not incredibly productive. But what Jerry and I were able to work on is I have been dealing with, to try to not get too specific, there is a person who was wanting to breed dogs, and he was wanting a permit to do that. And he found a loophole in the current ordinances that would technically allow him to breed dogs because dog was defined as an animal that's under 4 months or over 4 months of age. So he said, well, then I could sell puppies under 4 months of age because they're not dogs, and I don't need a permit to do it. So at the end of the day, I still told him no because there's a stipulation in Title VII that basically says, and I'm very much paraphrasing, that I get to administer it, and I get to interpret it. So at the end of the day, I told him, no, you need a permit to do that. But that uncovered a problem in that we needed to redefine dog and develop a definition that explicitly states that just because a dog is under 4 months of age doesn't mean it's not a dog and you would still be pursuant to any permitting. So we redefined dog. I have a copy of it if anybody wants to see it. It's not real flashy. Jerry, we talked about it last meeting, but I incorporated the new definitions that council had recommended, and it's just in the document, but really outside of redefining dog and erasing the reference to only being under 4 months of age is about all we accomplished in September.
Excellent.
That's the update.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
thanks. You did a great job. Under new business, guess what? We have none. And the next item is adjournment.
So we are going to meet, we're going to meet in November. We're going to go dark in December. So our next meeting is Wednesday, November 17th. So I need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
A second.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much. Great meeting, everybody.
Thank you.